you know, there's a whole ton of do's and don'ts. And if you don't mind, I would like to rattle off a whole bunch of don'ts for a second, or a few seconds. Don't count on first responders arriving fast enough, or maybe not at all. Don't count on stores being open, and don't count on shelves being stocked. Don't count on mail service. If you get a check from the government every month and that you depend upon it, you might want to have direct deposit because there won't be mail service. Don't count on credit or debit cards working. We tell people to carry cash all the time. Some people can carry more than others and carry small bills. You won't be able to get any money. And if you have a 20 and it really costs a dollar and they don't have change, you're going to be buying something for 20. Don't count on streets being safe. Don't count on walkie-talkies working. Don't count on public or private transportation. Don't count on tap water or well water. Don't open canned goods that have been exposed to floodwaters. There's something that's different because if you're in flooded areas, people might try to open a can that they got out of water and contaminate it. Don't ignore a non-functioning stoplight. A lot of people know this, but pretend like it's still working. It's a four-way stop. Don't ignore posted detours. Another important thing is people will try to drive through roads that are look like they're just mildly flooded. You can't tell that that road might be washed out. And a number of people through the years are killed just because their car gets washed away because they thought they could speed through that and get to the other side. Never go near a downed power pole. Never go close to a chemical spill. Go the other way. Don't drink liquids from any open container. It could be poisonous. It could be contaminated. Never enter a poorly lit or dark room. Don't enter a damaged structure. Don't leave your home or your house or your car unlocked. Don't stand. Here's the interesting thing: is when you see a building that's been damaged, you'll see it roped, taped off by the building inspectors. You can't go in because it's damaged. What they don't do is they just put the tape around the building. That building, if it's four stories, if it collapses, it collapses for more than four stories length on the ground. And so if a building is damaged after an earthquake, be sure you're 1.5 its height away because you never know. And the other thing you should know about building inspectors, and this is true across the country, is that, for example, if a town has 3,000 homes, that town might only have 3 building inspectors. So if there's a catastrophe, you can imagine how long it takes them to go over these homes to be sure if they're safe or not. And they will post a red, yellow, or green sign on the outside, and that's almost like a stoplight. Green is okay, red isn't, and the yellow or orange, it means there's caution needs to be taken. If it's earthquake country and there's been an aftershock, that plaque doesn't count for anything anymore, because things may have changed. So you have to know the date and the time on that and whether it's still good. So building inspectors may not get to the homes forever. Another thing is homes that are dependent on gas, if the gas is out, don't relight it. It's extremely dangerous.
Oh, you'll blow it up, right?
It could blow it up. And the other thing about that, too, is you see these gadgets that you wind up, for lights and radios. They throw sparks, so if you're near a gas leak, you could have
an
explosion.
So a lot of this is common sense, Jeffrey, isn't it?
It is, but people don't know it or they don't think about it. Interesting enough, there was a book called Unthinkable by Amanda Ripley. I really like that book. It has to do with what people choose, a reporter from New York or the East Coast. We interview a lot of people who survive disasters, and she talks about people going through denial, deliberation, and then decision to do something. The people that go through denial and deliberation are the ones who lose out. I mean, you have to move and move now. I mean, if you're sitting there denying this really isn't happening, delivering what you're going to do, you just might not make it. And there's examples of ships going down and tugboats flipping over and airplanes crashing. And the people who stay in their seats kind of stunned by what happened are the people who sometimes don't make it. That doesn't mean you should panic. I mean, you have to make decisions quickly, but I'm not talking about panic action. Never move anybody with a neck or a back injury unless their life depends upon it. Never pull an impaled object out of a person. Sometimes somebody can have a knife through them or a pole through them, a variety of things, and it actually is putting pressure on the bleeding spot. And the good Samaritan will say, oh, God, I got to get that out of there. And you pull it out, and you actually kill them. And we've seen that in the emergency rooms, too, where doctors even made that mistake. You try to cut the thing down in size. It was like an arrow. You would, you know, break off maybe part of it, but you leave it in until the person's in the emergency room where they can do it properly and can watch them carefully. Don't believe everyone who offers you help can really help you. There are all kinds of shysters around. There are all kinds of people who want to take advantage of you. Make sure they're uniformed or they're credentialed. Especially teach your kids that. That's what we were talking about before, stranger danger. The strangers who are child predators will show up in some major disasters, and they'll say, you know, your folks are at this hospital, and they want me to take you there. And this doesn't happen much, but one time is one time too many. And so we teach kids stranger danger. Don't treat burns the old-fashioned way with home remedies, with butter and ice. That does more damage.